JC Corcoran Podcast.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. No, it's not. How you doing, kids? Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. 321 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. Christmas Eve in St. Louis, 66 degrees. And it's getting close to the record. And even Christmas Day is going to be nice. And, you know, when I say nice, I mean nice for May or March. This isn't right. This isn't right. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to have wonderful weather. It's, you know, I'd rather have this than ice and snow. Although a lot of people at Christmas would like some snow. I totally understand that. But I think we're looking at a situation where we're going to have to start drawing the map a little different. You know, every year the National Weather Service says, they show a map of the United States and they say, here's where you got a good chance of there being snow for Christmas. And that line used to extend right about to St. Louis and then north. Well, they're going to have to push that whole thing up towards Green Bay pretty soon because it ain't happening. All right, let's get the icky stuff out of the way. We talk politics only when it was absolutely unavoidable. There are people who are describing Donald Trump right now as terrified because the Department of Justice and the January 6th committee may be working together. And if that's the case, whoa, I'd be scared too. Even if I didn't do anything, I'd be terrified if I knew both of those organizations were coming after me. Beginning January 3rd in the city of Chicago, you will need proof of vaccination to get into most businesses. I want to repeat that. In Chicago, starting January 3rd, you will be required to show proof of vaccination to get into most businesses. Joe Manchin's daughter, turns out, is one of these chicks that somehow bought into the whole EpiPen thing and was responsible for jacking up the price like crazy. Her dad is blocking aid to about 50 million kids. He's living on a yacht. He's driving a Lamborghini. And his daughter is running a profiteering outfit on EpiPens. Already seeing Trump DeSantis bumper stickers. And there's only one problem with that. That would be illegal. The United States Constitution says you can't have a president and vice presidential candidate that come from the same state. And obviously, the governor of Florida, DeSantis, and Donald Trump, now a registered resident of the state of Florida. Somebody's going to have to move. The Sex and the City girls issued a statement yesterday about Chris Noth. They said they are saddened by the whole thing, which is a fancy way of saying this will be the last time you hear from us. We did what was required. And when I say that, I mean the expectation of people. It's like you can't just pretend the thing didn't happen. That the, you know, I'm not saying that he did or he didn't. I wasn't there. Okay, I'm just saying that the allegations, and they're starting to stack up quite a bit. And so the girls put out a joint statement, and they said, "Yeah, we're really sad about this." Okay, which tells you nothing, really. I mean, when you think about it, even Bob Costas visited O.J. Simpson in jail, like the week after O.J. got thrown in there after the murders. And Bob sat next to O.J. Simpson on the set at NBC for years, and now O.J.'s in the can for chopping two people's heads off, and Bob's sitting there and thinking, well, I gotta go see him. I mean, I sat with the guy for years, and at the bare minimum, I gotta go in there. And so he visited with him, and I don't think that they've had any contact since. It does bring up an interesting point, though. Let's just say that somebody you're close to, whether it's a family member, and this might have something to do with it, too, because of the whole blood being thicker than water thing. But let's just say somebody incredibly close to you comes to you and says, I can't tell you many of the details, but I can tell you this. I know the police are after me. I'm probably going to be arrested. I might be put in jail. Can you help me? Now, there's all these aiding and abetting laws, and you can have your ass thrown in jail if you harbor somebody. It's like this Gabby, what's her name, in Florida. A lot of people are assuming it's only a matter of time before the parents of the alleged killer are also brought to justice in one way or another. And there's a lot of people like, look, this was an absolute tragedy. It was awful. Both kids are dead, but maybe it's one of those things where, as prosecutors, we may look a little greedy if we go after the parents now, too. What they did by aiding and abetting their son was illegal, but at this point, what would really be gained by prosecuting the parents? I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just saying that I think that would be the attitude of a lot of people. But again, you know, your brother or sister came to you and just said, look, I can't give you a lot of details, you know, blah, 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 like I said. How far would you go to help him out? Would you say something like, look, you're gonna, if this really happened, you're going to have to turn yourself in. You got to do it. I can't do anything to help you because both just end up in trouble. You're delaying the inevitable. So would you advise your brother or sister to go turn themselves in? Or would you run to the ATM and pull out a couple of $1,000, give it to them, and if the investigators came to you, would you maybe not lie, but maybe not tell them anything anyhow, buy your brother or sister some time to do whatever they're going to try to do? Because I'm telling you right now, I know a lot of people who have very, very tight families, and they would do anything. They would do anything to help out a brother or sister. I mean, geez, what if your dad or something came to you and said, look, here's what's going to happen? Brings up a very, very interesting philosophical and legal question for everybody. How far would you go? But again, I keep going back to what that conversation must have been like when Bob Costas, you know, goes in and sits down face to face with OJ in prison and just, well, it wasn't prison, it was just jail because he had just been arrested. Eric Clapton better do something pretty quick in terms of damage control because people are really starting to notice that something doesn't appear to be right with this man's psyche. Now, for several decades, stories about him being on racist rants on stage. It was like private. He's standing on stage and changing guitar strings or something. Hey, while we're having my guitar service here, let me start telling you why blacks are no good. You know, I mean, he really did this. But a lot of people didn't know about that until just recently. Well, now, some woman had an album And I can't remember if it was like a bootleg thing or something. Anyhow, yeah, here it is. It's a woman in Germany. She attempted to sell a bootleg CD on eBay for $11. An Eric Clapton bootleg CD for $11. The woman said she had no idea it was an illegal recording. The judge said she's got to pay $3,500 in attorney's fees. Now, Eric Clapton, worth millions and millions of dollars, coming after some woman, like, you know, trying to sell something online for $11. Now, in Eric Clapton's defense, I will say this. There are laws about copyright, because I've had a couple of problems like this too, where somebody tried to use my stuff and I had to, you know, I had to have my lawyer, you know, write a little cease and desist and say, you can't do that. I own that. You can't just use it if you feel like it. But again, there are laws that say if you don't defend your copyright, in other words, if the other side, shall we say, can prove in court that you knew that somebody was using your stuff, stuff that you had copyrighted or that you owned one way or another, you know, licensing, publishing, all that sort of stuff. And if you knew and you did not make an attempt to defend the copyright, you can lose your rights to that copyright or ownership claim. I'm starting to sound too much like a lawyer here. I got to stop this. Change my name to Chet Pleabargain. All right, the Fox News morning guys, what is it called? Fox and Friends. They've earned the reputation of being a little goofy, especially Ducey. And then you got Ducey's kid. He's the guy in the press conferences that Jen Psaki has every day at the White House. And he asks these contrived, accusatory, cheap shot questions. And Jen Psaki just, you know, she's, look, you can say what you want about her, but she's sharp. You know, anybody in that job has to be sharp in some way. Maybe not everybody, but in some way. You got to be able to stand up there and handle that stuff. And then you've got the, you know, the generic blonde who sits in the middle. And then you got Brian Kilmeade. And this isn't my opinion. I haven't doctored this up. There's video of this and it's transcribed and it's the real thing. It actually happened. So on Tuesday... on Tuesday morning on Fox and Friends, Kilmeade was talking about how the 12 days of Christmas, if you tried to buy all the stuff, it would be more expensive than last year. And that led Brian Kilmeade to inquire, and here's the quote, I know we had this conversation before, but were the animals used, were their breaths used to heat Jesus? Remember the animals would go around because it was so cold in Bethlehem? I get them confused. It was so cold at that time, the animals breathed on him to keep him warm. Well, nowhere in the Bible is it recorded that animals breathed on Jesus to keep him warm. So he's already said one really sort of dumb thing that also had no factual basis. But then he put the cherry on the top of the sundae. He said, I give Joseph and Mary full credit for overcoming the capacity of the holiday season and finding a manger to have the baby. Now, if you just think about that for a half a second, you would probably say something to Brian Kilmeade like, Brian, it wasn't a holiday yet. They didn't have Christmas the year before Jesus was born. So are you following us, Brian? No Jesus yet. No holiday yet. And you know who pointed that out to him? Steve Ducey. So, moral of the story, when it's Steve Ducey having to make a correction on something you said, that's a real, real bad place to be. Now, as we're actually inching closer and closer to the actual day of Christmas, got to remember there's a lot of people who don't buy into that. First of all, you have a lot of people whose religions do not celebrate Christmas the way Christians do. So you got that whole segment of the population of the world. But then you have people who are just skeptics about the whole idea of organized religion in the first place. Let's bring in George Carlin.
Religion has convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a list of 10 specific things he doesn't want you to do. And if you do any of these things, he will send you to a special place of burning and fire and smoke and torture and anguish for you to live forever and suffer and burn and scream until the end of time. But he loves you.
He loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-present, all-knowing, and all-wise. Just can't handle money.
All right. So there's the theological side of the whole thing involving a lot of people who don't buy into Christmas. But then you have the commercial side. And here's comedian Bill Burr.
Are you getting into the holiday spirit? We're getting close. Christmas coming up. Getting excited? Come on.
Yes, I am. I am. I actually like the holidays. And Thanksgiving is my favorite because you just get to eat and that type of thing. But I don't know. I don't like that Black Friday type of stuff. It just freaks me out. Makes me sad for Americans watching them getting trampled, you know?
Yeah. You don't like
Black Friday? Why would you do that? Why would you do that to yourself? Why wouldn't you just admit that you can't afford it at regular prices? Come back the next day. Come back the next day like a gentleman. Just walk in there. Pick out what you want. And if your kids get less, they get less. That gives them drive. You know, rich kids just sit around, you know, doing blow, sitting in Ferraris. They don't do anything. It's the poor kids that they make stuff happen. So,
yeah,
you don't get trampled grabbing your wig, you know. Suspenders flying off. It's so sad. To do what? Get an above-ground pool for $30 off? There is nothing in Walmart worth getting trampled over. I mean, there's nothing. It's processed meat, clothes, all of it. You're gonna get trampled. Like, make it like a high-end store. Like, I don't even know where. There's nothing worth getting trampled. It just makes me depressed.
Yeah.
That you would do that. People sit out for like weeks.
There's a week.
They don't even go to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like on their cell phone and their mom's crying. I just think you'd want to spend it with us. And you're sitting out there in that parking lot, feeling those people breathing down the back of your neck, just going like knowing who you're gonna elbow. It's just the saddest.
There are women that waited 22 days at Best Buy. They waited 22 days.
And what did they get? What do you think they got?
I don't know.
They got trampled.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you're going to go there, you don't want to be at the front of the line. You want to be about 40 deep. And I figure you pop out of the line and you wait till that first wave or two falls down. And then you go over the top like Walter Payton back in the day. Roll out of it. But even then, you got to know where to go in the store. Like, where is the thing that is on sale, right? Where are those Mint Milano cookies or whatever they have that you're going to make a beeline for? On that linoleum floor, you're going to blow out a knee. Like, it's the saddest thing. It's 1 year what people should do. You know, like Richard Branson, one of these hot air balloon rich guys, you should just like float in over them right before it. And just start dropping everything that they want. But even then, they would start stampeding. Like, no matter how many hot air balloons he had.
No, it's a bad idea. You don't want billionaires in hot air balloons dropping toasters on people. That's a stupid idea.
Yeah, like a little parachute. All right, gift certificates.
All right.
Bill Burr is one of the funniest people working right now. He's going to be touring coming up in 2022. If you get a chance to see him, the guy puts on an amazing show. Well, this is an anniversary of one of the goofiest things that we ever were involved in. And it goes all the way back to 1990. And you may recall this. The Cavallini brothers, Gino and Paul. Now, if you've ever played hockey or spent time around the game of hockey, you know that these hockey gloves that the guys wear have real thick padding. It's got to be at least an inch, maybe an inch and a half padding on the outside of each finger. Can't do it on the inside because you wouldn't be able to feel the stick, and you wouldn't be able to close your hand and all that. So all the padding is on the outside of the hand. Well, in a freak accident, and this really is awful. It really is terrible. It's about to get really funny, but the thing that started the whole story I'm about to tell you here, very, very serious.
So Paul Cavallini's out there playing in a Blues game against the Blackhawks, and somebody, you know, winds up and fires one of these howitzers and hit him on the finger, and somehow his finger got pinched, the inside of the finger, the inside of the glove, got pinched between his hockey stick and the puck. So in other words, this guy fires this shot, it hits Paul Cavallini in the finger, on the inside part of the finger, and severs the tip of his finger. Just cut it right off. So he feels it immediately, skates over to the bench directly, you know, into the clubhouse, right to the hospital. And can you even imagine how painful that must be and how much painkiller you would have as they treated you for this? Now, I know a little bit about this stuff because I've spent too much goddamn time in the hospital over the course of my life, but especially the last 2 years. But I do know that when hospitals do surgery on you, they have to keep the organ or the tissue or whatever it is, they have to store that. I don't know how long, but I do know that they hold on to this stuff. In other words, they don't just take out your appendix and then stick a fork in it and fire it across the room into a garbage can. And, you know, later on that night, the guy takes it out. There's laboratory stuff, and they have to put this stuff in there. And I think they also do experiments, and, you know, as they're teaching doctors how to be a doctor or a surgeon, they use some of the stuff. So the point being is that somewhere there's a jar in that hospital, and the tip of Paul Cavallini's finger is sitting in that jar filled with, you know, like formaldehyde. And I'm just speculating with the people I was on the air with that day. I was just speculating, God, you know, when you think how ravenous St. Louis Blues fans are. Can you imagine, like, if you just said, hey, we'll do this for charity. We'll give you the tip of, the tip of Paul Cavallini's finger. You donate, you know, $10,000 to, you know, Children's Hospital or something like that. Can you imagine? Somebody would probably do that. Yeah, we had a little chuckle about it, and that was that. Now it's like 2 days later, and some goofy woman from Minneapolis who writes a hockey column hears about all of this and writes a scathing report in the Minneapolis Star Tribune up there in Minnesota, calling us sickos and saying that we were auctioning off the finger, which was a complete lie. All we were doing is speculating. We're sort of making a joke about the idea that, can you imagine how, you know, like I said, you have somebody over to the house. Hey, Bob, by the way, come here. See that right there? Yuck, what is that? That's Paul Cavallini's finger. Cool. We never said we were auctioning it at all, but that's the way her story read. And then says the two morning show hosts were severely reprimanded. Well, isn't that interesting? Because I just had lunch last week with the guy who was my boss at that radio station at the time. And we have vivid memories of this whole thing happening. And we were laughing hysterically because I believe when I told him what happened, you know, the boss comes in and goes, hey, you should probably know about this, blah, 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 the finger, all this sort of stuff. And all I remember him saying is something along the lines of, you think we'll get on TV for this? I'm like, I don't know, maybe. He goes, all right, cool. So we were not severely reprimanded. And it was one of those instances where you look and you go, man, if people want to, they can just write anything. They're accountable to nobody. And I guess maybe she figured, well, if push comes to shove on this and somebody calls me on it, who are they going to believe? They're going to believe me, respected hockey writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, or a couple of goofy morning radio hosts in St. Louis. And she's probably right. If somebody goes around St. Louis saying something about me that's just awful, people will just naturally believe it. That's just the way people are. I've had so many people say so many things about me, it being places I've never been in my life, you know, that sort of stuff. So now this story is not over. This story goes national now. And we start getting phone calls from radio stations from all over the country. And we did one of them in Chicago, Jonathan Brandmeier, because I was a fan for a long time. And it's my hometown. And I just figured, all right, I'll go do the one in Chicago. And so they get us on the phone. And these guys are rolling. They think this is the funniest thing they've ever heard. Because on that morning, people heard us talking about this, and they start calling Paul Cavallini, who's still in the hospital and totally drugged out because of the amount of pain that he is experiencing because he just had his finger cut off, and they're calling him up. Paul, You got to wake up, man. They're auctioning off your finger, dude. And I'm sure Paul was like, huh? What are you talking about? They're auctioning off my... Huh? That's how I sound when I'm sedated. I'm sure that's how he sounded too. But they get him all excited and all worked up about this over something that didn't even happen. But those people in Chicago, oh my God. I thought they were going to wet themselves. They were laughing so hard as we were having this conversation on the air. All of this happening on this date back in 1990. All right, for those of you who have been listening to the podcast every day, a couple of weeks ago, we played the conversation we had with that professional burglar, Knuckles. And a lot of people liked hearing that again. We appreciate your comments. So that's with regard to the, I guess you would say, personal safety issue. You don't want your house robbed during the holidays. You never want your house robbed anyhow, but especially during the holidays. But there's more safety things. If you're having packages delivered when you're not home, well, go ask one of your neighbors. Hey, would you mind if I tell Amazon or whatever the case may be, UPS, to have the thing delivered to your house instead of mine so you can bring it in the house so we don't have to worry about porch pirates? It's the holidays. It's Christmas. Most people would be more than happy to just have somebody knock on their door. Merry Christmas. How you doing? You know, especially if it's great if it's a neighbor you got a great relationship with because you already know ahead of time that they will do this for you. But who knows? You know, maybe you have a conversation with somebody that you don't talk to that often. So there's an idea. Lock your car doors and don't leave packages in there, even if it's parked in the driveway. And the other thing that people do is they leave their car unlocked. And what's inside your car? Your garage door opener, in many cases. I understand a lot of people don't have an electric garage door, but if you do and you leave your car unlocked, all somebody has to do is reach in there, push the button, and now they're in your garage, and then moments later, they're probably in your house. And sadly, most of these crimes, and the police will tell you this, the overwhelming percentage of crimes like this are committed by neighborhood kids, 13, 14, 15 years old. And somebody like that is looking for a crime of opportunity. They just want some free shit. They're not looking to do something that is really, really, you know, organized and stuff like that and somebody would send them to jail for a long time. They're just figuring, okay, the window's open or the car is unlocked. That's all they're looking for is an opportunity like that. Just lock everything. So lock your car door. Lock everything. Just lock everything. If your tree is on display next to an open window, don't put the presents under it until Christmas Day. First problem is it could rain and get everything wet. And the second problem is that somebody is creeping around your house and they see an open window and presents. Also keep your tree watered. Every year, Consumer Product Safety Commission shows that video of a Christmas tree going up in flames in seconds. Thank God we have lights now that don't even get hot. Those LED things, everything cool to the touch. But, you know, those of you who've been around as long as I have, it's amazing all of our houses didn't burn to the ground because you touch the tree and all the needles would just come falling out. And by the way, if you want to have some fun, try to explain to some kid under the age of 10 what the hell tinsel was. I don't know. Do they even still make tinsel? I haven't had a real tree in the house for 20 years. And I still remember why. Also, because we had a puppy at the time. We bring in the Christmas tree on a Saturday afternoon. We go back outside to lock up the car and close all the doors. We come walking back in and the dog is peeing on the tree. Tree's been in the house 30 seconds. And finally, you know, because of fire hazards and stuff like that, you should have some sort of plan to get the hell out of the house, especially if you have people staying with you who are not really that familiar with your home. Everybody needs to know how to get the fuck out if there's a fire or some sort of emergency. And might not even be a bad idea to practice it a few times with your kids. All right, we're coming to the end here. And just a reminder, I'm still going to do a couple more shows. So we'll definitely be here tomorrow morning, the 23rd, and probably Christmas Eve, too. We'll see. And then we'll take a couple of days off, and then I'll talk to you again next week. I'll post some stuff on Facebook. Facebook page, by the way, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Email me at jc@jconline.com. We publish every weekday morning right about 7 a.m. Absolutely free. We archive everything so you can go back and binge if you so choose. Have a great day. Safe travels for those of you who are going to be leaving the St. Louis area. That's it for the J.C. Corcoran Podcast, Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. 321 days remaining in our American system of democracy that we have come to know and love over these many moons. Have a great day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.